We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
Patrick, you've been watching the healthcare issue for a long time, so I'm curious about this. The amount of money that Americans pay for their health insurance coverage has been going up for a long time. Is there any end in sight?
Well, I think, you know, as an organization, we ascribe to the pretty radical notion that healthcare dollars should go to delivering care at the bedside. So we have a lot of highly compensated executives. We have insurance companies that make pretty handsome profits off of it. The cost has stabilized under Obamacare. The cost to individuals has increased because employers have adapted by using high deductible plans or making people pay 15, 20, and even more percent of the total premium.
You refer to the high compensation received by some healthcare executives in Rhode Island. State officials like Health and Human Services Secretary Elizabeth Roberts described this as a matter to be decided in the marketplace. Your union has made some noise about it, but can critics like your union do more than just criticize this high compensation?
Well, a number of people have introduced legislation. Senator McCaffrey and other folks have put legislation caps. I think it's an important public policy issue for one simple fact. Many dollars within the healthcare system, whether it be public employee dollars, whether it be Medicaid, Medicare, are public money, and that money should be used towards improving the healthcare system. We're transitioning from a healthcare system where we're paying based on volume to one based on values and outcomes. We're moving towards community-based care. We need to pay attention to the idea that healthcare costs, everybody has something, has some skin in the game to keep them down, and everybody's being told, okay, be healthier, get exercise. I think this time for some belt tightening for everyone.
Let's go to Scott.
How about a single-payer system? Wouldn't that solve a lot of these problems?
A single-payer system would. A single-payer system is something that we should never take off the table. We know that the Medicare overhead costs are extremely low, lower than most private insurance companies.
Way lower.
So I think we should continue to explore that. And I think there actually was a hearing on that in House Finance.
We see how Care New England is winding down Memorial Hospital. And most people seem to think that even if this is very unfortunate, there are too many hospital beds in Rhode Island. Do you agree? And how do you see the fallout for consumers?
Well, I think the best analogy that I could say would work in this situation would be like a base closing commission. We all agree we have too many beds, but nobody wants their hospital to close. So we have to figure out a way to do that. The communities that are affected, the workers that are affected, need some assurances and some protections that they can move to the new jobs that are growing as the old jobs shrink, and that they can be trained and given an opportunity to learn new sets of skills that will be needed in a new healthcare environment, which will be more community-based and less hospital-based. The challenge for hospitals basically now is with decreased volume, which is the goal of the Affordable Care Act, fewer people in hospitals, you still have very high costs that you have to pay for. So if you don't have volume, it's hard to keep the error rate down, and it's hard to pay for all the standby costs.
What will be the impact on your workers and other unionized hospital workers of approval of the Care New England South Coast merger that's been proposed?
Well, it's not 100% clear, Scott, but our concerns basically are, you know, last time I checked, the South Coast area of Massachusetts was not the Silicon Valley. It's struggling just like we are here in Rhode Island with, you know, high unemployment and low wages. So I think the issue there is, you know, what are we getting? We don't want our family wage jobs for nurses and techs and other folks and have that work, you know, outsourced to Southeastern Mass. We want to ensure that the jobs that we have here at all the CNE hospitals are maintained and protected, and that workers have an opportunity to move as the work and the location and the venue of the work changes, that they have an opportunity to move as well.
We're talking here with Patrick Quinn, Executive Vice President of Service Employees International Union Healthcare 1199. And Patrick, one of your union's big successes in recent years has been reaching a contract with the state to represent child care workers. You describe this as a good thing. How would you answer critics who might question why taxpayers should be on the hook for an expanding union membership?
Well, taxpayers were already paying a significant portion of all of the child care costs, both in center-based and home-based locations. That is part of ending welfare as we know it, which was what we're going to give people health care, we're going to give people child care so they can go to work. So we need to continue to build a strong infrastructure for child care. We're very, very happy that for the first time in 8 years, those workers who were primarily women, primarily people of color, got a wage increase that was long overdue. It was to the point of dysfunction because we were losing providers who were moving to other areas. So we need a healthy childcare system, and we need to increase the quality. So we're happy that we're able to reach an agreement with the state to provide resources to have people upgrade their skills and training.
On a larger issue for organized labor, we all know that this has become a much less equal country with the decline of private sector unions. What will it take to bring that back?
Well, it's going to take focus. Some of it is our job. Some of it is our need to bring a better message, particularly to younger workers, about the benefits of unionization. Some of it is the legal framework. But some of it is like the fight for 15, Scott. We need to get back to what we are really about and what the labor movement is, which is a broad shared prosperity. Most of our workers make way more than $15 an hour, but we support the fight for 15 across the board because we can't have an economy where people don't have purchasing power and don't have enough to meet the basic needs for food, clothing, and shelter. That just doesn't work. We tried that. We've been doing that for the last 25 years. So we have to redouble our efforts to organize workers. We support the Verizon workers 100%. This is a company that's making money. This is a company that has, you know, highly paid, highly compensated executives, and they're attacking middle-class jobs. So we're going to do everything we can to make sure those workers win that fight. There's nothing like solidarity to win a fight like this.
You served on Governor Raimondo's transition team. How would you evaluate her strengths and weaknesses in her time as governor so far?
I think her overall strength is her focus. She's passionate about turning around the state of Rhode Island's economy and is extremely hard worker. I've, you know, seen her in action on that. As far as the weaknesses, I think, you know, overall, it needs to be a better job of working with constituent groups and with the General Assembly to forge a consensus. The best ideas, you know, come through forging a consensus, and you avoid mistakes that way.
I'm wondering, why do you think her job approval numbers aren't very good?
I think they're down mostly because she created higher expectations and said, well, I can turn this around, and told people I could turn this around. And it's a long, difficult slog, Scott, as we know, to get the economy turned around. And some of it is like the weather. You can't change it immediately. You just got to go get an umbrella and get a coat. So I think the main reason that the numbers are down is that she actually worked against herself by raising expectations and wasn't able to move the economy and move the needle as quickly as she would have hoped.
And before we let you go, we know that a $15 minimum wage for nursing home workers is a big priority for your union. What are your other legislative priorities for this session?
This year, we'll be looking again at the Nurse Licensure Compact, which is basically allows large hospital chains to employ out-of-state nurses. Our workforce amongst nurses is getting older. We need to begin to bring in new people. We have a demographic problem, and we have a racial problem, ethnicity. We need to bring in new nurses who can take the place of the folks who are, you know, in their 50s and even some in their 60s, so that we can continue to have that expertise and quality care that we're known for.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you, Ian.
And Patrick Quinn, Executive Vice President of Service Employees Union Healthcare, 1199.
Thank you for having me on the show, Scott and Ian.